on 98 FM and online. This is Phoenix FM.
God, I can't believe it.
What we've got here is failure to communicate.
Welcome to another edition of
Happiness to be found, even in the darkest of times.
That system probably contains a new data encryption algorithm. You'll never get in there.
Yes, welcome to another edition of the Happiness Algorithm with me, James Roast. The show that talks all things mental health, emotional well-being, and what we can do to make us that little bit happier. So on this week's show, we're going to be talking all things mastery, a skill that in my eyes it's almost been lost in a world that demands so much of us. So what do I mean by mastery? Well, in a psychological sense, we define mastery as a psychological force that both stimulates and motivates an individual to attempt a task independently in a focused and persistent manner to solve a problem or master a skill or task which is at least moderately challenging. Whew, that was a mouthful, but you get the idea. But why is this skill so important, you might ask? Well, for us to live an emotionally balanced existence, it's important that we're able to manage periods of discomfort. You've heard me say this before. And so when undertaking tasks which requires mastery, we're training our brain and developing psychological muscle. The challenge of the task requires an element of patience, thought, and presence of mind. It almost pulls us away from the hectic, busy, demanding world that we exist in and makes us focus on the job in hand. It's almost got a meditative quality. Now, what stimulated me to explore this area was a book that I read recently called The Craftsman's Legacy. I think it's by a guy called Eric Gorges, something like that. I think he's got a show as well. Anyway, the book outlines how there's something that we can all learn from the artisan craftsman and not just their skill. It says that despite our technological advances, we are busier than ever, leaving our lives more frazzled. It emphasizes that we can achieve a lot more by taking our time over tasks, slowing things down and enjoying the process. We should embrace failure, embrace the lost art of knowing when to stop and when to push through, and accept that perfection is an illusion. Now, that is something you've heard me talk about many times before. So perfection is an illusion. Now, most of all, the book shows how all of us can embrace a more creative and authentic life and learn to focus on doing what we love. Now, joining me on today's show is a man who loves to build stuff, an artisan craftsman in his own right. His social media account has inspired thousands, and I mean thousands, to have a go at things, initially in and around the kitchen, and now, and more recently, branching out into all areas of the house. 274 weeks ago, Alex Dodman set up an Instagram account to inspire us all to eat well and move a little more. Posting easy-to-follow snack and meal ideas, he quickly gained a following. Now, Alex may not be the name you're too familiar with, but mention the food grinder and I bet that you're all now smiling. More recently, Alex's easy-to-follow posts have moved to other areas of the house and are now focused on the stuff he builds. We're going to be talking all about the stuff he builds and to see how we can all learn something from having a go at it. So please welcome to the show a big, big Happiness Algorithm welcome to Alex Dodman. Alex, how are you doing?
I'm very well, thank you. How are you?
Listen, I'm over the moon that you're on the show. I really, really am over the moon you're on the show. I've followed you for a while. And I've seen your sort of organic journey from the food grinder days into more recently the stuff that you're building as well. And I must say, I'll be the first to admit, it does inspire me to have a go, to really have a go. But before we go any further, for those that have maybe been living on Mars and don't know who you are, give us a little bit of a summary. Let listeners know about who you are, what you do, and what your journey's been.
Well, first of all, thanks very much for having me on the show. I appreciate it. Basically, going right back to the start of my Instagram account, I just set it up because it was in January 2015, and I just set it up because I was kind of on a health kick, a New Year health kick, and going to the gym and trying to eat a lot better. And I remember before I even set it up, I absolutely hated cooking. Anyway, so when I was like looking for healthy recipes to eat, I was like looking online, and there was just lists and lists of ingredients, like 7 or 8 different ingredients for one meal. And again, I hate going shopping as well. So put them two together, I was like, look, there's got to be an easier way to cook than this. And so, from there, I just started doing like recipes with 5 ingredients and just putting them on my page, like to try and show people that you can cook a lot easier. Back in the day, a lot of the stuff I was doing wasn't that amazing. I mean, I was just doing like omelets and just basic stuff like that, because like I said, I couldn't really cook and I didn't really like cooking. And it just kind of went from there. I got, as I started getting a few more followers, I started getting a bit more kind of, tried to be a bit more fun with the stuff I was doing and put stupid little videos out there, because I started really enjoying it. And it kind of grew from there, really.
Well, you can see that, because there's a real added humour element to it as well. And for someone that, that really has surprised me, that you were someone that didn't enjoy cooking.
Yeah.
You didn't enjoy the shopping part.
No.
But actually, through that, almost that those adverse circumstances of disliking something so much, you turned it to your advantage and began to publish these videos and these recipes.
I mean, that's what I was trying to do, because I was thinking, I cannot be the only one in the world that gets frustrated with looking at recipes and seeing like 8, 9, 10 different ingredients that have got to go in there. And I was like, there's got to be an easier way. And obviously the stuff I was making at the start wasn't amazing, but I mean, people were like latching onto it and enjoying the kind of easiness of it.
Yeah, and that, as you say, that simplicity of it and bringing those ingredients together. Was you a bit of a foodie before? Did you enjoy food?
No, I used to like. I mean, when I was, well, I'd cook for myself and I'd have like a super noodle sandwich with like crisps on top and or cheese. I mean, especially when I was at university, I mean, the stuff I used to have, just like sausages cooked on the George Foreman grill, like sausage sandwiches. So, I mean, I'm not a foodie at all. Even now, I'm not a foodie. It's bad to say, but I don't like appreciate going to a fine restaurant or anything like that.
Yeah.
I mean, my taste buds have probably, I could never be a food critic or anything like that, because I'm not a foodie like that at all.
Wow. Okay. Amazing to come to. So why social media then? Why did you use social media as a way of documenting and sharing what you were doing?
I suppose it was like a lot of other people when they first set it up. It's like a bit of accountability, because I'd really started getting into the gym just for like health reasons and just to feel a bit better about myself. And it was definitely accountability, and it was also posting the recipes and putting them in a place where I could easily find them again, instead of like using notes or something in my phone. And I was also using it to look at other people's recipes online and like getting different ideas and finding like nicer stuff to cook, and just trying to tweak what other people were doing, like basically using less ingredients but just tweaking it a little bit. So just getting
Yeah. Well, I mean, the word you use there that stands out for me, which I think that and others have heard me say on the show in the past, is that accountability aspect. Yeah. And even with the patients that I'm working with, a lot of the time we've got these platforms there, whether it be social media, we've got technology or constantly in our hands or in our pockets to be able to record and capture what we're doing. And interesting that, that even back then you was using it as a tool to hold yourself accountable, to remind yourself of why you were doing it.
Yeah.
And for any of us that are looking to change behaviors, behaviors over a period of time and to encourage them to be sustainable, is the fact that there has to be a level of accountability there. We have to understand why we're doing it. So I love that fact. So how quickly then did it accelerate? How quickly did you think or did you find that actually, well, people are really watching this. People are really commenting a lot on what I'm doing here.
It was when I started because I used to draw on eggs and do like film scenes. Like I remember the first ever one that got quite a lot of traction, I did like a Titanic film scene, a bit where they're sinking on that plank of wood, I think it was. And so I did like drew little eggs and then had that scene. And that got like, that seemed to get loads of views and people were sharing it. And so from that point, I was I thought, oh, that's a good route to go down. I'll do like the film scene thing. So for probably about a few months, I was doing these eggs film scenes. And there was so many people sharing them back in the day. Because I started in 2015, there was not as many users as there are now on there. And there was a real good like community. There is still now on there, but there was a real good like little community of people sharing things and like helping each other out, commenting, and like I was commenting on loads of other people's posts, and it was a really nice environment to be in. And yeah, it was just the followers just started coming in and coming in and coming in, and then there was quite a few big pages on there that shared some of my stupid videos as well, and that the followers just kept coming in and coming in. So it was great.
Did you feel at any point that you then had a duty to keep publishing more and more content, or did you still feel that it was within your control and it was still just enjoyable?
It got to a point where it was kind of, I would say, out of control. I definitely had a duty. I felt like as I got I remember hitting over the 1,000 follower mark, and I was doing a video every single day. So I was going to my normal full time like 9-to-5 job. And at this point, I didn't have any kids or any other really responsibilities. So I was going to work, going to the gym, coming home, doing a video, going to bed, and repeating that like seven days a week, making a video. So it didn't get too out of control, but I felt like I had to do it. And it took a long time to get out of that point, feeling like I have to do it every single day.
Well, for someone that didn't enjoy cooking nor enjoyed shopping, a video every single day producing content as well, that's quite a lot of demand there.
Yeah, there really was a lot of demand. I mean, and that's what made me kind of move away from the cooking in the end, because it got to a point where I wasn't actually enjoying it, and not being a foodie anyway. It was a natural progression out of it in the end.
Yeah, before we come on to that, because I do want to look at that sort of mastery content, but even listening and understanding the journey up until then, as I say, with accountability and the traction and that responsibility that comes with sort of social media, sometimes particularly a big presence. Because if you look back through your stories, you look back through your account, you were meeting various people, you were in contact with others, that food that was not something that was big on your agenda for so long was opening and unlocking quite a few doors.
I was doing like live cooking demos at like food festivals in front of loads of people.
How did you feel doing that when you're standing on stage doing these live cooking demos, the man that used to griddle George in the George Foreman grill?
Yeah. I won't lie, I felt a bit of a fraud, to be honest. But I mean, I had got to a point where I'd got quite good at cooking easy stuff. I mean, it wasn't like rocket science what I was cooking. And I think that's what people enjoyed, because I mean, not loads of people enjoy cooking like really complex stuff all the time. But I mean, doing the live demo, I mean, I did one at the NEC in Birmingham at Body Power. I did one in some wellness festival in London as well. And I honestly didn't feel like I belonged in that place. Even when I was doing it, I was thinking, oh, yeah, I'm kind of like, this is great. But I mean, I didn't feel like I belonged there at all, really.
Well, I think that's that. I'm pleased that you say it, not because you had to, you experienced that, but in the sense that I'm sure many others that do follow you and will come to follow you as well will see a very sort of confident guy that, and I say we're going to come on to this, but that has a go at stuff and looks through some of your historical stuff, and you would never know that that wasn't there. And for so many people, that sort of fraudulent feeling sometimes bubbles up for a lot of people, and to hear you sort of say that and share that with others, I think that will help a lot of people recognizing that, because you still did it, you still done it, you got through it, you pushed through it, and continued on.
I mean, it was great. It was great, because I was kind of thinking, oh wow, like, I mean, they were paying good money as well, and people were watching and asking quite a lot. And I was like interacting with everyone, and like I could answer all the questions that were coming in and stuff, but I never felt 100% comfortable there. And I always kind of felt like, yeah, it wasn't as I didn't like cooking. I mean, when I first started my page, I'd never admitted to anyone back then I didn't like cooking. It was only when I properly moved over that I kind of told people that I've never really liked cooking.
It must be sort of family and friends that you've grown up with, people you went, your whole roommates at uni must be thinking, who's this guy? And he hated cooking.
I mean, back in the day when I first started the Instagram account as well, it was kind of, I never showed my face, because it was like you was a little bit nervous about showing your face or trying to like what you were doing. So it took quite I don't think I even showed my face or said what my name was until I was well over the thousands of followers, because I was a bit like, it's at the start I felt a little bit embarrassed about it, because I was just kind of, I mean, as I was saying, I was on like a bit of a health kick and trying to cook simpler recipes and stuff, so I didn't really want anyone to know that. So it wasn't until it blew up a little bit that I actually eventually revealed myself.
So even up until that point, before people started to see you, was that then, did you keep it quiet from then, friends and family?
Yeah. I mean, I didn't tell any of my friends and family actually about it until well after that.
Oh, wow. So how was that then received when they did find out it was you?
Some people are like, whoa, like, what the hell are you doing? So I remember thinking some people were like taking the mick a little bit, but I didn't really care about that at that point, because I had quite a few thousand followers. So I was like, oh, it's going all right.
Yeah.
But
did you have people following you, friends that were following you that didn't actually know it was you before then?
I don't think so, actually. No. But yeah, when I did eventually like to start telling people, a lot of people were like, oh yeah, this is good. Like, there was quite a few supportive people, but there was definitely some people laughing at me, but I didn't really mind.
No, well, and who's laughing now? So I think that, so at that point, when you did start to sort of, you know, showed it was you and put a face to it, you're up to 1,000 plus followers. Had it at that point shifted, like you say, into more of a, wow, I need to sort of produce content here, because this has moved away from accountability of self, you know, this is more than just a health kick. I'm really having to push forward with stuff now. Is that when it become more of a purposeful role?
I remember it feeling like that when I think I was on just over 10,000, and I got my first email about doing a bit of branded like sponsorship work. I remember thinking at that time, like, oh my God, this is amazing. And they were asking me for quotes and whatever, and I was just plucking numbers out the air because I hadn't got a clue what I was doing. And they agreed to it, and they signed. I remember, because it was a long time before you had to do all of the proper like contractual hashtag ad and whatnot. They sent me over this little tiny contract on Word. I just signed it, sent it back to them, and then produced a bit of branded content for them. And as after that went up, I was getting emails every single day about stuff after that, and it. Bearing in mind, I only had 10,000 followers, but because it was in like 2015, it was kind of a bit of a new world. And like at one point, I was turning loads of work down because, I didn't want my page just to become a sponsored like post area. But that's when I really...
That was important.
Yeah.
That was important to you to still remain, keep the essence of it.
Yeah, definitely. And but that was the point where I remember thinking, okay, this is kind of real now. This is why I've got to push out a video every day and just keep it going. I didn't really have a plan in my head where it was going, because I felt so busy then, back then, even when I didn't have kids. I felt so busy doing these videos every single night. And I was trying so hard to make them really good. And they were taking, sometimes they were taking 2-3 hours to do. And I was doing that every single night. And that went on for quite a while as well.
I mean, that's a big ask. That's quite a big demand to be checked. Like you say, you was working full time and you still are working full time now. To then come back and document and cut and edit all of that content for a 60-second video or a 30-second clip, that's quite a lot.
It was a lot, and it was taking its toll on me as well. Because I remember I did when I got a really big sponsored post, and I shot the video and edited it, and it wasn't right. And I was up until 3 a.m. doing one video once. And I do remember thinking, this is getting out of control now. This is a bit crazy what I'm doing here. But you know, I got through it, and it took a long time to get out of that kind of mindset of feeling like I have to do it all the time.
Yeah. And was anyone else seeing and witnessing this at the time, the sort of toll it was taking on you?
Well, yeah, when I didn't have kids, my partner was she used to help me quite a lot back in the day, like coming up with the recipes and stuff. But the filming and editing of it was like really taking its toll on me. And that was just me doing all of that. So I remember when I went to bed at like 3 a.m, she was like, "What the hell are you doing?" And I was like, it wasn't going right. And I felt like I really had to get a good one. So, I mean, that's why I was doing all that stuff, really.
And I think this is, you know, speaking to others in similar positions, as I sort of touched on at the beginning of the show, that, well, a sort of nod to last week's guest as well, Andy Kershaw. We spoke all things sort of authenticity, and, I think sometimes the world, and particularly in social media, it can amplify that need for perfection sometimes. And many others in similar positions to you, as I say, have shared similar stories where there's points where they recognize that it all becomes a little bit too much, that actually, what am I actually doing here? And striking that right balance is really crucial.
Yeah, I think that there's a lot of people out there that, especially in Instagram, that I'd know 100% feel exactly the same, but you'd never see it on there. It's always behind closed doors.
Why do you think that is? Why do you think that there is this presence, particularly on Instagram, because it's not just words, there's visual content there as well. Why do you think that we still fall into that trap of masquerading or promoting that perfection?
I don't know, really. I think a lot of it comes from, I can't remember what it's called, but you get some sort of endorphins or something when you get loads of likes and whatnot. And I did, back in the day, I definitely fell down that trap. When I was getting loads of engagement and video views and likes and stuff, I was like, oh yeah, this is amazing, this is great. And I think that's the trap a lot of people fall down. They feel like if your engagement goes down or like you're losing followers or whatever, people are really panicking and stuff. And that's when they've got to bash out loads of content and just keep it up and have to put on like this persona of a really happy person doing like a good job, but like deep down I guarantee there's a lot of stuff they won't be enjoying.
Yeah. And I think that, you know, look, I've said it before particularly that it's important that we understand that social media can offer a form of escapism sometimes, even for the voyeur that's sort of following the pages and looking. Because interestingly for me, what I've noticed over the last sort of 4 or 5 weeks in the current climate and the position we're in with COVID-19 and being in the lockdown, I've seen, and I don't know, maybe slightly differently for you, but I've seen a real drop off of sort of social media usage with regards to people were almost beforehand in that demanding life that we were living, really sort of tight on being very time poor. We're almost using social media to sort of dip into as a almost a form of indulgence and pleasure just to wallow away the time somewhat. But I think where everything's become elongated and stretched and we've become a little bit more time rich, I'm seeing that there's a different usage with social media and how people are approaching it and how people are interacting on it. So let's, well, I tell you what we'll do. Let's move on to your first song choice, because I think before we move into the next phase from the food grinder into now, you know, declaring, actually using your name as your social media handle. Before we do that, let's kick off with your first song choice. And stick with us. This is a Happiness Algorithm with me, James Rose. This is I'm joined by Alex Dodman, and this is his first song choice, and it is Chubby Checker, Dancing Party.
Phoenix FM.
Welcome back to the Happiness Algorithm with me, James Roast. I'm joined on today's show by Alex Dodman. You may know him as the food grinder. He is Alex Dodman. He's the man who builds stuff. Alex, that was your first song choice, and that was Chubby Checker and Dancing Party.
Yeah, it's a great song, isn't it?
It's a belter of a song. Tell me a little bit about why you chose that song.
That's the type of music I'm into, like the kind of old 50s, 40s, 50s, 60s stuff, and I just absolutely love it.
Well, a great choice and a great first song choice to kick off the show. So before we went to that break, we were speaking about obviously the food grinder days. 274 weeks ago, you started your Instagram page. A guy that didn't like cooking, didn't like shopping. Obviously, it mushroomed, pardon the pun, it bloomed into this massive following of creating nutritious, simple, easy to follow meal ideas. And then more recently, you made a transition. You transitioned into sort of using your full name, Alex Dodman. You moved away from food and into building stuff.
I did. And that was so daunting doing that. Changing my Instagram handle name was one of the most daunting things I've ever done, because I just expected everyone to completely unfollow me, be like, who the hell is this guy? but it definitely needed to be done, because like I say, the food was just, I just wasn't doing the food anymore.
And what was it about, was that a conscious choice? You know, you mentioned before your song there that, you know, you wasn't always a massive, you're not a foodie, you're not a massive lover of food. There were demands that were coming from it. did you talk to your wife about it? Did you sit down? Did you sort of say, right, look, I've got to move away? And how long was that period of thought?
It was a really long period, because it kind of started when we moved from our first house to this house now. And this house was a complete renovation project. And I remember doing a story, an Instagram story, the day like I got the keys and opening the front door. And I was like ripping the kitchen out and stuff. And I was just using my Instagram stories at that point to kind of just show what I was up to day to day. And it was all DIY stuff, just completely renovating this house. And I was still doing all the food videos and stuff on my main page, but it got to a point where I was not getting any questions about food anymore. Even when I was putting a food video up, there was like only a couple of comments, and people didn't really seem that interested in it anymore. I think that also comes from the fact that now on Instagram, it's just completely bombarded with like food accounts. And if you want to find a recipe online, just quickly Google it and there'll be a video somewhere online about it. So it was completely overwhelmed Instagram, the like food space on Instagram. And like I said, I think that was like April, May 2017. And it's took me till 2020 to change my name. So that's like 3 years. So that's a long time.
So you'd already noticed the landscape changing, the sort of dynamics of people accessing food and looking for it changing. How did that feel? Did it come as a bit of a relief for you? Were you concerned that, oh goodness, you know, you'd built this reputation over sort of 2 or 3 years?
It was a little bit like demoralizing at the time, because it took me quite a while to build it up. But you could definitely feel the landscape changing, and there were so many food accounts on there. And I remember even like helping quite a few of them, like, because there was a good community on there. People were messaging me and stuff like, oh, how do you edit your videos and whatnot? And then like as soon as they got big, they were just like not engaging anymore and stuff, and like just kind of forgetting about me and stuff. But it started to feel a little bit toxic on there, really, about all the food accounts. But like with the way it was all going on there, and the people just not being that interested anymore, because there was just so much stuff on there, just people could just get it from anywhere. I think it got boring. I mean, I originally went on there because I enjoyed watching other people's videos and looking at their recipes, and I found myself not enjoying watching them anymore. If I scrolled up to like a food video, I'd just carry on scrolling now.
Right. So you'd already observed those behaviour changes in yourself and realised that it wasn't providing the return or the value that it once was.
Yeah, and I wasn't enjoying it. I didn't enjoy making the food videos anymore. Like, because when I used to do them with the little egg things, I did actually quite enjoy thinking of the ideas and stuff, but I was bored of making them. I hated the editing part of it. Getting the lighting as well, trying to like find a good lighting spot in your house, or being really thankful when it was the summer months because you could photograph your food outside. But it was all that kind of stuff which just didn't make it enjoyable anymore. Like I say, with people just not taking an interest in the food videos anymore, it just didn't feel worthwhile.
And do you think that our relationship with food has changed? Like you say, there's a mass market for it, of course, now. But access to content is more readily available. We can go online, we can follow accounts and find what we need. Do you think people's relationship with food has changed? Do you think that, you know, you started out where it was about a fitness kick, it was about getting healthy, moving more, in line with adjusting your food as well. Yeah. Has that landscape changed?
I think it has, because when I first started it, I was just doing like the omelets and stuff. And you went through there was different phases of like people were doing paleo diets, people were doing, I think like low carb and all that clean eating stuff as well. And it kind of transitioned because people were like, oh, great on the clean eating. Like there was loads of clean eating stuff on there. And you could write a caption and it wouldn't ever kind of offend anyone. And it's got to the stage now which you can't even put like, I'd feel a bit uncomfortable doing a recipe with meat in now, because like it would probably offend vegans and than like vegetarians. It's just the whole landscape's definitely changed in the food video world, because like I say, you'll definitely offend someone on there, definitely.
Did you ever feel that, you know, not coming from that industry, as it were, and you're you know, standing on stage doing cooking demonstrations and being surrounded by other sort of from the fitness industry back, did you ever feel, you mentioned earlier about sort of that feeling a bit of a fraud sometimes, did you ever feel as though, I need to go and do something, I'm going to need to go and train or do something else, or in fitness or food, or were you still sticking with your sort of what was right for you?
I did feel a little bit like that. I mean, some people were kind of messaging me sometimes thinking I was a PT. And that, I felt like that was, not that I was answering the question like a PT, but I used to have to say, I'll like go and message someone else for kind of advice like that. And it did, yeah, I did feel a little bit, because it was a kind of, I was only doing it, like I say, to be a little bit, feel a little bit fitter and eat a little bit better. But I did kind of feel like the fitnessy thing, but there was a little bit of kind of pressure in that, but it wasn't too bad, really.
Good. Well, look, let's look at more recent times then, and move into this. As we said, you then took the plunge and decided to move away from the food grinder into using your name as your handle. And after 4 and a bit years or so of being the food grinder, and you're sort of dancing eggs, as it were,
you then
pushed okay, and then it shifted over.
Yeah.
So tell me a little bit more about that process, the challenge, how difficult it was.
I mean, going back to 2017, when I was doing the stories of the DIY bits and bobs, it was a really slow transition. And I think I was just putting photos up of like the house getting done in the end, and I was still putting food videos in between it all. But the engagement I was getting just wasn't worth doing the food videos anymore, because people were just interested in the renovation side of things, which I could see why it is a lot more interesting. And now I'm a lot more into all of that kind of stuff. Like the accounts I follow on there are loads of renovation kind of accounts and DIY accounts and people doing up their houses. And yeah, I was putting, I think it was the end of 2018. There's like a trend on there where you put your most liked 9 photos or something up, my best 9 or something photos up. I remember doing that, and all of the 9 photos were DIY stuff. Not one food videos got in there at all. And I said like a joke on my stories, I think I might just change to a DIY account. And I was getting loads of messages from people saying, oh yeah, you should definitely do that. But even then I was too scared to do it. Because that was the end of 2018. So I went through...
What was you scared? Just sorry to interject there. Elaborate on that a little bit more for me. So what was it that was... Where did that fear come from? And what was that fear about?
I don't know. It's because you kind of grow... It sounds sad. But when you got an Instagram account and you grow it, it's almost like your little baby. So you're so like precious about it, and you are... There's so many people out there that I've spoke to that have also changed their handles, and they're like, I was so scared, I was nervous, like everyone was going to unfollow me, it'll be like, what the hell is this guy doing? But you kind of forget that people are like watching your stories and have enjoyed the DIY stuff. That's why you've got all the kind of the likes and engagement and messages from it. And you just, I don't know, you just kind of freeze and get so scared. You think, oh God, this is going to go like catastrophically wrong. And because I had like the food grinder website and like I branded loads of clothes and stuff, it was such a worrying feeling changing it all. But as soon as I'd done it, I felt so much better. It felt like a relief finally.
That's lovely to hear. But, and also like the, you know, just the, I think people will really get and understand that, you know, that not maybe from just a social media perspective, but when we're living an existence, and I don't want to over dramatize this in any way, shape or form, but sometimes, like I say, there's that obligation or there's that commitment or there's a life that we're living sometimes that doesn't feel right. And transitioning or shifting into something that feels congruent, that feels genuine, that feels true, can be an enormous weight that's lifted off our shoulders. So good for you for doing
Thank you.
So it's been obviously for those that follow you and those that are listening in and will go on to follow you, I'm sure, your renovation on your second property that you touch on there, you have done a lot, haven't you?
I have done a lot. It's been a crazy journey, and thinking back to when we moved in here, like the journey and the stuff I've learned has just been absolutely crazy.
So you, before the food grinder, you didn't like food and you didn't like shopping. Now we move on to this stage of your life, which is stuff I build. Tell me, you did have some interest in DIY and building stuff.
I mean, I've always loved it, like building bits and bobs, and like just the first house we lived at. I mean, I did basic stuff like paint, redecorate, and I did put in a new kitchen, and I did really enjoy it, and I've always had an interest in it. So, which is why it feels great now doing it properly on my account.
Yeah. And share with some of the listeners some of the stuff that you've done in this new property.
So, I mean, when we got it, we had to completely rip absolutely everything out of it. So all the electrics and there wasn't even any central heating, but like the old radiator and so the gas fire. And yeah, I mean, it had an outdoor toilet. That's how kind of old it was. So we ripped it back. It was just bricks. So, I mean, basically, I haven't done everything myself. I mean, I had an electrician. Obviously, because I can't sign off stuff like that. And there was a plasterer. And my friend built the extension, as the actual brickwork of the extension. But the stuff that I've personally done in this house, we've done, like, I mean, I installed the kitchen, the floor in the kitchen, put stud walls up, built like a second loft, which was one of the turning points for me, because that... because not coming from a tradesman kind of background or not having a trade at all, I was getting stuff signed off by building regs, and like there was this loft which took quite a lot of weight and stuff, and to have that was one of the early ones I did, and the building regs guy come around and signed it all off. That made me think, God, I can actually do pretty much not everything, but a lot of stuff in this place.
That's great. So that feeling of, I suppose it's that validation that you've done something, and then to get building regs sign it off, that sense of validation must just bring with it a huge sense of achievement. And then, as you say, the confidence to then go on and have a go at other stuff.
Yeah. I mean, I think a lot of people get put off by doing stuff like that because they think they can't actually do it. And there's a lot of tradesmen that do kind of put people off doing stuff and kind of make you feel like you can't do it, or be like there was one person around here that was just he had an attitude where he made me feel like I couldn't do anything. He felt like he was belittling me a little bit. This was right in the early days when I needed quite a bit of work done, and when I realized I could do it, I was like, what is the point of getting people around to do just simple stuff? It's just not worth it.
So that importance of I suppose it comes back to that relationship aspect of being able to, instead of tearing someone down or removing the confidence from them, you know, so that part then, that mindset of going, you know what, I am going to do this. You can't tell me I can't do it. You know, don't belittle me in that way. I'm not saying that's the sort of thing you were shouting at him, but certainly reflecting upon being able to achieve something. Where does that come from? Have you always been somebody that is a bit of a go-getter? You've always had a drive, a motivation, and a determination to achieve something.
It's took a long while to get there because it's I'm not the most like confident person in the world like that, but it does take little different points in time to make you feel like that. Like even going back to the Instagram account when I first set it up, like not feeling confident to kind of put it out there with to the world. But when you do, you feel a lot better about it. But it's took a while growing it, but I do have that kind of outlook on everything I try to do now, because it just like you can do it basically. Yeah.
Mm. And I think that's the message really for, and why I wanted to get you on the show, because I think what your page does for many is that it promotes that have a go attitude, that sort of taking something or seeing something and think, you know what, I could probably do that. I mean, one of the things that's really interesting I wanted to ask is where do your ideas come from? I mean, because they're not just standard builds. There are other aspects, whether it be step stalls or art projects with your children. I mean, where are all these ideas generating from?
I don't know, it's just kind of the need for it, really. Like that little step stall, I mean, I was online trying to find little toilet stalls, and they're all like big, bulky plastic things, and you kind of have to custom make something like that. So it's just kind of thinking of what can be done to fit in the space that you need it. I don't know, really. Most of my ideas are kind of a joke to start off with, like the swimming pool that I'm currently trying to build. That was a joke.
Well, I mean, we couldn't have done today's show without mentioning the pool. So let the listeners know a little bit more about this pool that you are building.
So, I mean, at the back of my garden, I built a gym. This is kind of where it started. I built this like 6 meter by 6 meter gym at the back of the garden. And that kind of started off as a joke. So I remember thinking, oh, I could have a little like concrete patch or something up there and get a couple of bits of workout equipment. And as I started thinking about it more, my kind of brain went into overdrive a little bit, and I eventually built this huge gym with like a sauna in it. And just in front of it, because we've got quite a long garden, there was a big bit of like dead land because no grass was growing or anything. And I just said, it was a Christmas, I said, oh, I could just build a swimming pool there because nothing's really going to grow there, is it? And like, we're not going to use it because it's kind of up the garden, it's not a great patch of ground. And I went inside and just started thinking about it a bit more. I went online and was just watching people building swimming pools on YouTube, and Pinterest was just like me pinning loads of stuff, home pool projects. And it was only the next day where I actually properly decided, like, I'm definitely going to do this. So that's where that came from. And I watched a video. There's this lady building a swimming pool in Holland, and she does the whole thing by herself, and her husband's filming it. And after I watched that, it's like an hour and 20 minutes, I phoned up straight away and hired a mini digger to start it.
And for those that haven't seen it, I urge you to go and have a look on Alex's page, because he seriously is building a swimming pool, and it documents him getting the digger and, you know, excavating all of it.
I hope it doesn't go wrong now, so I'm going to look a bit stupid.
Well, and you've got that time limit of July or something, haven't you, on it?
Yeah, it was 1st of July, but because of everything that's happening in the world at the minute, I thought I might give myself a bit of an extension.
Yeah, a little bit of leeway. Well, I mean, what a year to do it as well, particularly with a lot of staycations happening, because none of us are going on holiday. So you'll have the most admired garden and and swimming pool, you know. So you've done a lot of projects around the house, and you've done, you know, more of the grander, fair to say, more indulgent tasks like the gym and the swimming pool that you're working on as well. What is it that it brings you when you complete a task? You know, you said there about building regs with the loft, a sense of validation, having that come from someone else. What do you get when you're completing these tasks, big or small, around the house?
You do really get like a real good sense of pride, and you've done it yourself, and it does feel it feels really good. One of the projects I did was when I fitted my kitchen. I remember we got quoted £3,500 from the place we got the kitchen from to fit it. And I remember thinking, like, because I'd fitted a kitchen before, I was like, oh, that's a lot of money. Like, I've got to try and do this myself. And when I did it myself and it came out, well, I think it's great, but it came out well. The sense of like pride and stuff I got from that was like massive. And knowing like how you fitted everything together and you know it's done exactly the way you wanted it as well, is a big part of it, because when you get other people to kind of do work, it never does seem to go exactly how you want it. So you can get, when you do it yourself, you can get everything exactly how you want it.
Mm. So I suppose a lot of people will be wondering, and going back to our earlier conversation about perfectionism and stuff, are there jobs or tasks that you undertake that don't go according to plan?
I have to rack my brains here. Not that I'm perfect at everything. There's definitely been stuff that goes wrong.
You're killing everyone out there that's listening to this, that's thinking, come on, there's got to be something
I mean, when I do projects and stuff, I get really frustrated. When stuff's not going right, I do get frustrated and annoyed with myself. Like, it never goes as smooth as it looks on my videos, because you don't see me swearing to myself in the background. I'd be like, what the hell's going on?
Yeah.
Like, when I'm trying to screw something in, like the drill slips or the screw bends and stuff and all that kind of stuff. But I was trying to build a pallet shed up the garden, just out of pallets, and just taking a pallet apart is so annoying, and I was cutting myself all over the show. And I eventually stopped that because I needed the space in the end for the swimming pool, so that didn't go to plan. I like half built it and had to rip it all down. And I really wasn't enjoying that one, because taking the pallets apart are an absolute pain.
Yeah. It goes back to, as I say, at the top of the show, when I spoke about the book, The Craftsman's Legacy, and it is a really good book in respect of, not that I've not got shares in this book, but it's an interesting read from a psychological perspective. But it teaches us to recognize when enough is enough, and there's a good example of that. You know, you start on the pallet wood fence, but then sort of you're not enjoying it, and it's knowing when to sort of walk away, and then out of that springs the opportunity to build a pool.
Yeah. I mean, there's been the frustration thing of getting stuff right, and that does kind of take it out of you a bit. But I mean, I'm really enjoying the DIY, the stuff I'm doing now and the stuff on my Instagram page. I genuinely enjoy it. As I said before, when I was doing the food, it got to a point where I wasn't enjoying it at all, and I don't worry about posting every day now. And I'm not worried about like how many likes or whatever anymore at all. It's just it's a page now where I'm actually genuinely enjoying it. I enjoy putting the finished results up on there, because a lot of people are making this, a lot of the stuff I'm doing themselves, and enjoying getting stuck in to DIY, especially during this time as well when everyone's locked in. The amount of messages on stuff. And stuff I'm getting about DIY and people's little projects and home projects they're doing. It's great. It's a great feeling. And it's like I said, I'm not a tradesman or anything. So I don't, but to get, when someone makes something that you've made, it does make you feel great. And it's great to see everyone getting stuck in.
Mm. There's almost that double layer. Like you say, you're getting a sense of achievement and a kickback from building or undertaking the task in your own home, and then you're getting that fed back for others that are attempting it as well. That's lovely to hear, really lovely to hear. Mm. You touched on it there, and that was going to be one of my questions around moving from the food grinder days into the stuff that you're building at the minute, and the return and the value that that's giving you, the enjoyment that you're getting from it. You also said that you don't feel the urge that you've got to post every day now.
No.
That must be a wonderful position to be in.
Yeah, it is, and it's taken ages to get there as well, with, like I said, with the food that I was doing and the pressure I felt, put myself under to make a video and post it. I just had to force myself out of that, and I wanted to genuinely enjoy what I was doing. And as I'm really enjoying the renovation stuff, I just had to take a step back. Like, I don't really look at, you get like an insights page on Instagram of all your numbers and whatnot. Like, I used to religiously look at that every single day. I don't look at it at all anymore, ever really. So it's just force. I had to force myself to enjoy it, which is quite hard to do.
So what happens when the house is all done?
I've got such a long list of stuff that I need to do still. And I reckon I'll be going about another 5 years with the amount of stuff I want to do here still. Like, I want to make a tortoise pen. Like a tortoise pen. Like a tortoise for the garden. And I'm going to try and make some really nice little house for it. I've just got so much stuff to do. But ultimately, the dream is to buy a bit of land somewhere and completely build a house from scratch.
Well, I mean, look, I'm sure many of the listeners will be extremely pleased that there's at least another 5 years in the tank, and you're not going to be stopping. You're not going to be finished anytime soon.
Oh, no way.
And as I say, that dream of building from top to bottom is one that you know there was the stories around the old dairy that you looked at, and so that's the end goal, is it?
Yeah, that is the ultimate goal. From like a personal perspective, like with the idea with the dairy, I would love to have, like, I'd like to build something for the community somewhere. Mm. I'm not quite sure what yet, but I'd like to build like something that people can come to or like do. I haven't got a clue really in my head, but I'd like to build something for the community. That's what the dairy idea was about, because it was in town where I live. But ideally, the ultimate dream personally would be to buy a bit of land, maybe out a little bit out further out in the countryside, and build something from scratch.
Well, I like that idea. I tell you what, we're going to go on to your second song choice now, because I'd like to sort of come back and talk a little bit more about the community aspect and building in the community, because part of your page, and we, as I say, it's another point we can't mention on the show, is your children, your family as well, and they're a big part of your stories as well. So we're going to go to Alex's second song choice. And when we come back, we're going to be talking all about community, what Alex is doing, and find out more. Okay, so don't go anywhere. This is a Happiness Algorithm with me, James Roast. My special guest today is Alex Dodman. This is his second song choice.
Nobody, baby, but you are.
Hey, hey, hey.
Phoenix FM.
Welcome back to the final part of the Happiness Algorithm with me, James Roast. My special guest today is Alex Dodman. You may know him as the Food Grinder. Alex is an Instagram megastar, and he more recently focused on the stuff he builds. That was Alex's second choice, Penny and the Quarters, You and Me. A really, really great song. Another song that I'd not actually heard before. Beautiful song. Why that song choice, Alex?
It's great, isn't it? But there's a film with it in, and I love like cheesy love story films.
Yeah.
So when I heard it on that, I downloaded it straight away. It's just a really beautiful song, I think.
It is. It is a really, really beautiful song. So that was Alex's second song choice. That was Penny and the Quarters and You and Me. So Alex, before we left and we took that short break, we was talking a little bit about sort of building the community and wanting to give back. Where does that come from then?
I don't know really. I just like kind of getting involved in kind of community stuff, helping people out, because I've worked in a public service job for absolutely ages, and my first job was in a public service job, and I left that and I worked for like a private company. And it didn't sit right at all. And I just didn't like the feeling of making some like other person rich. It didn't feel right. I didn't feel like it. It just kind of felt like a bit of a waste of time. So I much prefer working in places and kind of doing stuff where you can help other people, because I like to think everyone's kind of got that within them, that they like helping people and getting involved.
Well, we would certainly hope so. We would certainly hope so. I think everyone has the potential to, and it's just whether they're able to connect with that part of self. And we must, you know, at this period of time, we must give a little nod to your employers, who are the East of England Ambulance Service, part of the sort of wider NHS picture as well, particularly in this really difficult time, very challenging time. On the subject of helping other people, you have also, as well as doing the stuff around your house, documenting that, editing the videos, posting it, being a husband and a father, and working for the East of England Ambulance Service, you've also volunteered as well.
Yeah, I've signed up to the NHS volunteer scheme, waiting for my first alert to come through. It hasn't come through yet. Because it looks like on the app, loads of people have signed up. I think they've stopped even taking applications as well, because there are so many people that have signed up, which is great, because it just goes to show that there's loads of people out there that want to help and care for people.
A lot of goodness in the world. There certainly is. So, but you are doing your part already, and it would not be fair to not acknowledge the chap who you are collecting shopping for on a fairly regular basis. And the reason why I'm mentioning this chap, for those that haven't seen, on Alex's page and on his Instagram stories, it's created quite a stir, the gentleman's handwriting. He is from a different generation, an older generation, and he has the most beautiful handwriting, and I understand that has gained quite a following.
Yeah, that's my next door neighbour, Mick. He's in his 80s, so I go and do shopping for him, and he pops a little list through my letterbox, and I put it on one of my stories once, and the amount of people that responded about how beautiful his handwriting is, loads of people were saying, oh, that reminds me of my like nana's old writing, that's brought back some lovely memories, and people are always interested in like the list of food he gives me, because they're like, I wonder what meals he's going to be making tonight. So I'm going to try, once this is all blown over, to have some sort of live Q&A or handwriting lesson with him, which will be a good one.
Yeah, we'll have to get look at getting Marvelous Mick on the show in the future. Marvelous Mick and his beautiful handwriting. So very much a community feel, as you said. You know, you've got some wonderful qualities and some great traits, and that real sense of connection, and what underpins our existence is relationship, and you can see that that's there in abundance and wanting to give back. As I said before your song, was that a big part of your social media presence and on your stories is your family, and you've had a newborn son recently as well, or reasonably recently. Congratulations.
Thanks.
So tell us about your family and why they're an important part of your page.
So I met my partner in like 2012. We moved in our first little house together. Two kids later, still going strong. Like my daughter Ali gets involved in the stories quite a bit. She seems to love it. I'm sure she'll grow out of it soon and won't want to be in them at all. And I've got a son born 15 weeks ago, Eddie. That was an absolute whirlwind. Like going from one kid to two has just been completely crazy and very hard work, like all parents out there with even one or two, three or four kids would know. It's hard. It's, being a parent is definitely the hardest thing I've ever done, without doubt.
And how do you juggle it all in terms of the stuff that you're building, keeping up the presence on social media, and as I say, you've got that full-time job as well?
I'm all constantly busy doing stuff, which is great because that's what I enjoy. We're very lucky to have quite a big garden, so like the kids are always out running about the garden when I'm doing bits and bobs, so they kind of get involved, or Ali can get involved when she can. It's hard. It's very hard. I'm very busy all the time, but we just keep chugging along.
And I think that, you know, another reason for getting you on, and hopefully others will see this on the page, is that one of the things that is great to observe and watch with the posts that you make is that, as I say, the children are an integral part of that process. So you're not just putting out videos of building stuff as such. There's stuff that you're building for Pest One, endearingly referred to, for Ali, and that's Alex's reference to his daughter, not mine. I'm not just calling him a pest, so there's stuff that you build for the kids as well, and that's an important part. And I think that balance that you create on your page is really lovely to see, because you're right to point out that all of our lives are hectic and busy and demanding. If I find, and I mentioned it on previous shows, that what we can see is that we are finding ourselves now in quarantine, locked down, and with an abundance of time. Having you on today, hopefully people will be able to have a go at stuff, whether that be building stuff in and around the house, or whether that be for the children, or getting the children involved as well. It's a lovely sort of experience to take on. It's when Ali gets a rival page, and then, you know,
she's got an Instagram page that I made for her.
They're in the waiting.
Yeah, I haven't posted on it for ages, but it's there ready for her when she wants it.
That's it. So on the subject of social media, because I know a lot of people will find this useful, that maybe are embarking on a career and using social media as using Instagram as a platform. We know there's enough in the media that says that it's quite a negative arena to occupy. Can be quite dangerous, can be quite difficult at some times. What's been your experience? You said before, when you started out early 5 years ago, five and a bit years ago, it was almost this community type feel. It has changed. It is a much bigger beast now. How do you get any negative comments? How do you handle them?
I've got a fair share over the years. I've got kind of quite an inoffensive page, I like to think, as well, whereas the most people that get trolls are kind of the preachier pages. Is when you get a kind of negative message, it's kind of, I remember like the first time I got one, I was like, oh my God. I remember like thinking, oh God, like, I don't know what to do. It does take a while to kind of just think, it doesn't even matter, just like delete it. But it could definitely affect people. If you were getting a lot of hate all the time, or people just like sliding into your DMs, giving you abuse, it's quite hard to kind of digest what's going on the first time you get one.
And what would you recommend people do if they do experience that sort of discomfort.
I'll just delete it. Don't even reply, because you get an urge to have a go back at the people, especially when they say something which you just completely disagree with. Like, I've messaged some people back before, but it's just not worth it at all. I just delete and block. Definitely just delete and block, and just try, don't dwell on it. Just don't dwell on it at all, because there's so many people out there in the world that do stuff like that. They probably haven't even thought twice about it, so they're not going to think twice about it if you delete and block it anyway.
Yeah. And I suppose as long as you're doing what you're enjoying, and it's lovely to hear you say when you're talking about what you're currently doing with the stuff that you're building, you get so much pleasure and enjoyment. And looking at the data behind it, the likes or the followers and stuff, it doesn't really, that's not where the value comes from. The value is coming from doing what you're enjoying and what you're loving.
Yeah. Yeah. Like I mentioned before, the likes and the views and stuff used to be the main thing that like drove me to carry on when I was doing the food, but I genuinely wouldn't care if I got one like now on a photo. But seeing people like get involved and making stuff, and there's a lot of kind of the kind of best message kind of that I receive a lot is kind of single mums that get involved doing DIY, so, and asking me for advice and stuff. And I always take the time to message everyone back on my page. So if anyone messages me for advice or like my input, I'd always give it to them. And when they come back and show me the photo of what they've done, it's absolutely great. I love it.
Well, I take my hat off to you, because I mean, you must get inundated with messages on a daily basis.
Yeah, I do get a lot of messages. I always reply to every single one. Even sometimes it would take me like a couple of days to get back to people, I always reply to everyone on there, because like, people took the time to message you, especially when they're being nice. Like, people deserve a response, I think. So I always make sure I take the time to do that.
Good for you. Some great, some lovely qualities. Well, I suppose another big part of another big story that you posted this year was the bus expedition.
Yeah.
Was coming back from Germany. Was it Berlin or something?
Yeah, Munich. Yeah.
Munich.
Yeah.
And for those that are not up to speed on it, just tell us a little bit about that, Alex, and what that involved.
Well, I went on my mate stag do. It was, I think, February time. And it was when that storm Kira was about. So we flew out there on the Friday, and on the Sunday morning, there was like about 25 of us. We all got up with this notification on our phone saying that the flight had been cancelled. So we went to the airport trying to get on a different flight and change everything. And they were saying in the airport, like, it's not going to be today. It's probably not going to be tomorrow. It's going to be like 2 days. And I said, again, as a joke, I'm going to just try and get a bus. And I looked online and found this bus, and it was 24 hours to get home. And I was like, look, I'm booking it. Anyone else wants in, come with me. And I managed to convince two of them to come with me. So we got on the bus. It was 8 o'clock that night, and everyone else got a hotel, and they're like, oh, we're going to just fly back tomorrow. And it kind of was a race to get home at that point. And sat on this bus. It was a great, great journey. Sat on it for 24 hours. Arrived at Victoria 7:30 or 8 o'clock the next night, and everyone else was still stuck in Germany. They couldn't get back for another 2 days. It was great. Yeah, it was great. It was a good idea in the end.
Well, what an adventure. And I think the reason I brought the story up is because it's situations like that a lot of people would become anxious over, that would almost, you know, it would cause a big problem for them. But what you know, following the narrative or following the story that plays out, you seemed pretty laid back. You didn't seem too fazed by it all.
No, I just wanted to keep moving though. So I would have probably felt anxious sitting in a hotel overnight and not knowing when I'm going to get home. So I just said to them, look, I just want to keep moving. As long as I know that I'm kind of on the way home, I'll feel a lot better about myself. And it worked out great. I wasn't too nervous or anything. It was a good journey.
Alex, it wouldn't be right to sort of finish the show really without sharing with the listeners any sort of pointers or advice in and around managing our mental health and emotional well-being, and obviously in the context of just doing stuff and getting stuff done. What can you share, and what would be any sort of words of wisdom, really?
I know it sounds cliche, but just say, kind of find something that makes you happy and do it. Not worry about if it's going to upset or like anyone else. Because finding the when you get in the mindset of not really caring what other people think, other than like your nearest and dearest, I suppose. But as I said before, when I first set up my Instagram page, I was nervous and I didn't want anyone because I felt like embarrassed and stuff. But to get out of that mindset is a great place to be in, not really caring. Like, so I couldn't care less who saw what I was doing now. So as long as I'm happy doing it and enjoying it and kind of just doing it every day or whenever I want to. But it's a hard place to get in, and I don't really know the roadmap of getting there. It's definitely takes time. But once you get there, it feels great.
That's lovely. And I think it echoes a lot of what we've said on other shows as well about that authenticity, element of accountability that you touched on earlier in the show today, doing things that make us happy, recognizing that it's about us, it's about the self, and not being over consumed with what necessarily the rest of the world thinks. And I'm pleased you made that point as well. I suppose that's the play on words with the show, the happiness algorithm. I think that there isn't an algorithm or a special science that goes with it. It's something that we've got to keep treading that path. We've got to keep moving, like getting back from Germany. We've got to keep doing something to keep finding what's adding the value and what's enriching our existence in some way. Alex, it's been an absolute pleasure to have you on the show.
Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
I'm so pleased you've joined us. And as I say, what a time to have you on the show as well in this time where we can all be having a go at something. We can all sort of tinker and have a bash at building something and putting it together. I wish you all the very best for the future. I will be watching and seeing what you're building next, and keeping an eye on the pool. And then if the lockdown lifts, then it's all a pool party around at Alex's.
Yeah, you're all invited.
Alex, so much for today. We'll be back next week for another episode of The Happiness Algorithm. We'll have more great guests, more great music, more great song choices from the guests, and I'll be sharing what I've been reading this week. So let's head over to Tom. Has today's show gone?
I'd say that was a pretty successful broadcast.
I would agree with that too. Thank you all. Be safe, be well, and be happy. We'll see you all next week. Happy.
looking for happy, looking for happy. Holding hands, toes in the sand, your head on my shoulder, drinking the moment the sun falls into the sea. I'm just looking for happy. Yeah, I'm just looking for happy.
Phoenix FM.